Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Sphere of the Muses, I'm proud to bring you The Creative Process with Nick Curto. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you today?
Thank you very much, Hercules. Great to be with you and our listeners this evening. We have a wonderful show in actually two parts, which I'm very excited about. It's the first time we've ever done that, and it's going to be something. So I'm very much looking forward to interviewing my two wonderful guests, very talented men.
As am I. I'll be here if you need me, and I'm looking forward to your show.
Thank you. Let me know, please, when we get close to the first 30 minutes, okay, so that I can then go to the second part of the program.
I will indeed.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, my friend. Okay,
my pleasure.
Well, this is a podcast program, Nick Curto Presents The Creative Process. I'm Nick Curto, your host, and this is a live 60-minute podcast. I can never remember not being highly creative in my own personal life right from the very beginning, the early years, right up to the present. I truly believe that being creative in whatever area of creative expression you happen to choose will keep you, and here it comes, young. I really do believe that. Being physically and mentally active and creative taps all the energies of your body and your mind. It's a great connector of your spirit and also of your insights. And I would recommend to everyone, whether you are an active artist, writer, a poet, or simply have never done anything like that, I highly recommend that you try it, whatever area you happen to be creative in. And there's so many creative areas. I mean, it could even be cooking. I love to cook and try new things, new combinations. Poetry, try writing a song. I did that, and I actually recorded two of them right now. I'm working on a third. And I never did, had no training for that ever, but simply thought, I really want to try this, and it's been very, very rewarding. So just want to, right at the very beginning, recommend that to my audience. Go ahead and try it, and let me know how you do. I'm going to give you my email address right now, which is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral 1, at gmail.com. If you have a question, a comment, I certainly would welcome that very much. Okay, let's get right going. We have two amazing men to be interviewed this evening. And each is going to have about 30 minutes. We have actor, writer, director, producer. And we have also an amazing playwright who also has many additional titles in the creative world where he works. So first we're going to have Jonah Scott Mendelson, and then in the second half of the program, we're going to have Donald Stephen Olson. And I'm very excited that both of these wonderful creative gentlemen are with us this evening. So let's get right to it. My first featured guest for this live podcast program tonight is Jonah Scott Mendelson, and very welcome to you, my friend.
Thank you, Nick. I'm delighted to be here tonight.
I'd like to start right off at the very, very beginning. So may I first ask you, where were you born and where do you make your home now?
So I grew up in New Mexico, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We moved there when I was 5, so I don't remember living anywhere else. I now live in New York City. I live in Astoria. I like to think if I have any zen on the crowded New York subway, it's because I grew up in beautiful New Mexico with mountains and mesas and horizons.
Wow, that's quite a variety of wonderful places to be. So good for you. You've seen the best of both worlds. I'd like to have you provide our listeners with an idea about your creative side right from the very beginning. Do you remember just any early creative projects you might have started as a young man, and then how did that progress? And then take us up to what you're currently doing, which is a very exciting theater project.
Well, my family certainly encouraged us all to be creative. All three of us kids had music lessons. So I studied piano from the age of 5 and violin from 4th grade through 8th grade. And then in 5th grade, my mom took me to see the touring production of the play of The Elephant Man by Bernard Pomerant. And first of all, 5th grade is very young to see that play. That's a bit of a challenge. And I was completely mesmerized. This thing with people talking aloud, this live event, and the poetry that's in that play, it's really an extraordinary piece. And from that point on, that's what I wanted to do. So I've been acting since let's see, by 6th grade, my first performing role, I was singing in boy choir. And so I was cast in a production of singing in the little boy sopranos who are playing at the beginning of that. For me, there's something that happens when you get together in person in a theater and embody the story. I get to be on stage and tell a story that's both familiar, you have to recognize it as true, but also surprises and is fresh and lets us access parts of ourselves collectively that we often don't get to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just an energy that's just there. You feel it. You're alive. I would have to say you don't feel any more alive ever than being on stage or in a creative mode, don't you think?
I think that's right. I think that's right. And especially these days, I've always been drawn to live theater. It's a golden era of film and television, and it's amazing what we can do with technology. And yet, when you get in a room and are connected in your breath and the space between you, it just awakens sensations and parts of yourself and your identity that we just don't get when we're staring at a device. So for me,
couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
It's a very different experience.
Especially in this time of polarization and disconnect. We're largely coming out of quarantine, and yet we're still masked and taking care of ourselves. Finding ways to gather and see each other as whole people is so important, and that's what I'm committed to.
Oh, couldn't agree with you more. It's been a nightmare for just about everyone on the planet. The lockdown, with the fear, with the news programs pumping that you have to get inoculated, even though it's an experimental. I could go on, and this is a whole other program, but sometime I really want to do a program on that. But you're absolutely right, and theater is a way of bridging that gap, and we have to have that to be happy and to be connected. I totally get what you're saying. And it really is true. You know, when I was a kid in the late 40s and 50s, there was a big theater, a wonderful theater in Springfield, Massachusetts. And for some reason, that little theater had some people who were in vaudeville that was still functioning. And they would do a movie. The movie screen would go up, and then the curtains would part back, and they would have acts from vaudeville. It was just incredible to see that genre as a young kid, looking at all that and the talent that was on that stage live. And I'll never forget that. Unfortunately, you know what? That theater is now a parking lot, and it breaks my heart every time I go near it because I remember what a wonderful theater that was.
That sounds like a wonderful memory. And, you know, yes, the theater gets knocked down. We replace it with movie theaters or shopping centers and whatnot. But at the same time, there's something so human about wanting to get together and, hey, let's tell a story that we need to tell. You know, we theaters, you know, people, if you suppress the theater in places, then people do it in their basements or their attics. We're like weeds. You can't get rid of us.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And again, it breaks my heart when I go past that area right near City Hall in Springfield, Mass. and see that empty that parking lot, and what we, what I had seen as a child will always be with me, and it enriched me quite a bit right then. Well, let's move to such an exciting project that you have been on, and I also want to talk also about your theater group and all that. So start wherever you'd like, but I want to make sure we cover that.
Great. So my current project is a play called Love Alone, Elegies for Raj, and it's a play for World AIDS Day that's based on the poetry of Paul Monet. And it's a true story of love persevering in the face of calamity. So Paul Monet, some of your listeners may be aware of him. He was a really prominent voice in the early 90s. He came to prominence because he was a gay writer who lost his lover, Roger Horowitz, to AIDS in the late 80s at a particularly horrible moment in the AIDS crisis. And Paul had this extraordinary ability to transform his personal grief and loss into poetry and memoirs that allowed that experience of gay men in crisis to be seen with compassion at a time when there wasn't a lot of compassion going around. The Reagan administration didn't even acknowledge AIDS for 8 years into it. There was a lot of horrible discrimination. There was no gay marriage, so one's partner could be in the hospital and you could just be denied permission to see them. And Paul Monet went through these difficult experiences and was able to tell his story in a way that brought people together. He was the first openly gay writer to win the National Book Award writing about gay subjects for his memoir, Becoming a Man, which was his memory about growing up gay in the 60s and 70s and coming out. And then his work on AIDS, his memoir, Borrowed Time, and then this book of poetry that I'm adapting, Love Alone, they're raw, and they invite us to remember, no matter how much pain or grief we're in when we're losing things, that the important thing is to focus on the love. And he teaches us how to hold on to our faith in ourselves and humanity, even when we're going through profoundly difficult times.
I've seen the amazing work, and I absolutely was floored by it. It's so deeply affecting. It speaks to your very heart and soul, and I was quite moved. I've lost many friends during that the AIDS crisis, many friends and lovers, as a matter of fact, and this absolutely triggered all of that, and it really speaks the truth about what was going on. And tell the audience now what are the dates of your show, and more about the details of how they can get tickets and all that.
Great. So the show is being presented by a group called The Tank here in New York City, which is a wonderful home for emerging artists. The dates of the show are Saturday, December 3rd at 3 p.m., then Sunday, December 4th, and Monday, December 5th at 7 p.m. To get tickets and to learn more about the show, you can go to lovealone-play.org. That's lovealone-play.org. That's the website for the show. There's a sample, a video sample of the piece, and there's a link there where you can purchase tickets. And I'll also say that the show is absolutely meant to be seen in person. As I said, I'm a live theater guy, but the performances on December 4th and 5th are also available for live stream. You go to that same ticket link, and you can buy a pass to live stream it if you're out of town and if you're not able to join us for the live performance.
Also, will that be recorded, and will there be a way to see that later?
So right now, we're going to make a recording for marketing purposes. Our focus with the show is to perform it not just now, but my long-term goal is to perform the play every year for World AIDS Day as a living memorial to the AIDS crisis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What a great idea.
Yes, one of the things about growing up queer, growing up LGBTQ, is that we get a little distanced from many of the family structures or the religious structures that allow us to be part of community and memory and holidays. And so it's very important that we have presence on the calendar every year for Gay Pride in June and Gay History in October, and that we remember the tough times. The AIDS crisis was a time where people said, hey, we matter. We were at risk of losing everything, and we said, no, we matter. We need to have a voice. We need to be seen as part of society. And we developed a lot of the strategies coming out and for taking our space in society because we had to get the care we needed during the AIDS crisis. So World AIDS Day is not just a point of memory, which is absolutely critical, but it's also a place to remember and remind ourselves how important it is to keep up that fight and to remember the courage and the strategies that AIDS activists came up that made it possible and changed how we think about our role in society. We deserve our space as much as anyone else. And it was the AIDS crisis that broke us through that in many ways. So the opportunity to gather and retell that story for the younger generations, to give a chance to invite people who lived through it, a chance to share their stories of loved ones lost, of the fights that they had to take that got us to gay marriage, that got us to the point where we can have the pronoun conversation and include trans people and people who are even more on the margins. That's all built on the work of a generation that had to fight like hell to get through the AIDS crisis. So the goal of this is to do it live every year so we have a focal point to gather in community. So right now there's not plans to make the recording available, but we are looking to present the play every year regularly so that there will be future opportunities to tell the story.
Well, well said, my friend. And it is such an amazing work. It's such an amazing experience. After seeing it, I wrote what I thought about it, and I wanted to just read that briefly for our listeners tonight. Love Alone, Jesus with Roz, has a quiet power as this very special new play addresses loss while it embraces limitless love. I highly recommend what Jonah Scott Mendelson has created to bear witness to the human condition in this stunning, healing, and deeply affecting theater piece for World AIDS Day. And it's signed, Nick Hurdle, Gay Activist. I mean every word of that. You should be so proud of this work. It is a gift to not only the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and all the rest of those letters community, but it really is a gift to all communities because it shows such understanding and love. And I just commend you so much for taking this amazing work of poetry and translating it to the stage. It's a one-man show that is so memorable. And it's got to be seen. You're right. Live is the way to go on this one. But if you're at a distance, then perhaps doing it with the live stream would be another way to access this work.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. I do want to say that the performance is primarily, it is a one-person show. I play Paul Monette. I get to speak his gorgeous poetry. It's a little bit like Shakespeare because it's all in verse, and yet it's very contemporary language. It lands easily on the ear. But I also want to mention that I have a wonderful team that I'm working with on this production, particularly my director, Lloyd Rumore, who... it's really been a wonderful reconnection with him. Floyd was my first acting teacher and director when I first moved to New York in 1994. We lost touch for a number of years. And when this project came along, I reconnected with him. He still does some artistic work, although he's also an AIDS activist and nonprofit administrator. Most recently, he was the leader at the Brooklyn Community Pride Center. He's now recently left there, so he's free to do this project. But to reconnect with Floyd, and the other thing that's really amazing is that Floyd himself has been HIV positive since the early 90s. So in working on this, for him, it's brought up a lot of his history, of people he's lost, of battles he's fought. And for me, it's interesting. I'm not HIV positive. I've lost a few friends, but I came out just at the point where, really, as a young 19-year-old, as I was saying, oh, I think I might be gay, the first thing out of people's mouths was, well, don't get AIDS. I mean, that's a lot for a kid who's just beginning to figure out who they are. It was pretty traumatic. And so for me, in some ways, I shut down and played it safe. In doing this piece, it's my way of honoring those who fought those battles. And in some ways, there's a grief, and these challenges are easier to bear if we can share them. So I have this capacity as an actor to step into this character, to step into this story. And by working with Floyd, who's lived so much of it, we're really trying to create something that's really honoring the hugeness of that experience. And the other thing about it is that everything we learned then, we're relearning now in different ways, with COVID, with the attacks on gay rights. We need to relearn how to do battle, how to fight for our rights, and how, in the difficult times like now, how to stay focused on our relationships and taking care of each other. So to work with Floyd, to be inhabiting the words of Paul Monette, I've been so moved when people like you talk about my favorite reaction when somebody sees the piece or even a piece of the piece is they said, oh, that reminds me of a friend or a doctor I worked with or a nurse who took care of somebody. And my real goal in doing this in December, the 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th, is that everyone who comes will have a chance to share a story that they need to share, to remember someone, or to get in touch with their own unprocessed grief and have a chance to feel it together so we can carry it together.
That indeed, that's exactly what it does do, and it touches you very, very deeply. It just does, and I'm telling you, I was at points crying because it so touched me on so many levels. It's such a powerful piece, it just is. And again, on Saturday, December 3rd at 3 p.m., Sunday, December 4th at 7 p.m. And then Monday, December 5th, also at 7 p.m. And the December 4th and the December 5th at 7 p.m. are both of the times it's going to be live streamed and available. So those are the times and dates to keep in mind. And it's going to be something. I just hope a lot of people will go in to see this, as well as if they can't see it live, which is the best way, of course, is to go to the live stream. The Tank, of course, is at 312 West 36th Street, and that's between 8th and 9th Avenue on 36th Street. It's actually just north of Penn Station by only two short blocks going uptown. So it's an easy way to do that, and it's going to be something. I'm actually going to go to the Saturday performance at 3 o'clock. I'm geared for that. I'm looking forward.
Oh, terrific! I'm so glad that you're going to be there that day. Yeah,
I would have missed it.
One of the mottos for me as I've worked on this. First of all, I do want to say, the piece, it deals with weighty issues. It is about grief and loss, but it's also the one part of Paul Monette's brilliance. And the thing that's been our guiding light in this is, how do I, as the artist, as the actor, and our company in creating the piece, how do we carry that grief, but also, he's so smart and he's so witty. I mean, there are points in the play where you laugh out loud. There are parts
yes.
where he gets in touch. This is my favorite Paul Monet quote. He says, "Go without hate, but not without rage. Heal the world."
Wow.
And that's wow. what his poetry is. Go without hate, but not without rage. We need our rage because that's the fuel that lets us reach out to people in need, to stand up to bullies. And that's what Paul insisted on. That's what Roger Horwitz stood up for. Roger Horwitz, his lover, was a lawyer who was involved. He did a lot of work with the Los Angeles Women's Shelters. He was also on the board of the Los Angeles Community Center when it was growing and becoming an institution that could support homeless youth, that could support seniors who didn't have other resources. Both he and Paul were really living the life of sharing what privilege they had with others and making space for beauty and for everybody to have a voice. And
I'm
so
sorry
that's, if I can live up.
I'm sorry to intrude. Nick, you're 4 minutes away from the halfway point.
Oh, thank you very much, Hercules. Appreciate the head talk. Thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to just wrap up and say, if I can get a fraction, if I can live up to a fraction of their call to action and compassion in presenting this piece and sharing it with people anew, then I'll have done them proud.
Well, my personal opinion is you have been incredibly successful with this already. You've done what you set out to do. And I'm going to recommend this to everybody I know. This is going to go out to my entire mailing list because I don't want them to miss this. Would you please, if you will, repeat the website? Is it that you had before?
Yes.
If you just want to repeat that, I think, and go slowly so they get it.
Will do. So the website to learn more about the show and buy tickets is lovealone-play.org. That's lovealone-play.org. You could also do a search for The Tank NYC Love Alone, and that'll bring you right to the theater website as well.
Excellent, excellent work. Just again, I'm thrilled that more people are going to be seeing this incredible work, and I just wish you so much additional success on this project. Very, very excited for you on a personal level, as well as an acting level, and the whole production is unforgettable. You cannot leave that theater without taking the message, the important message of that play with you. And I'm telling you, I see a lot of New York theater, and this is something to cherish, absolutely cherish. I thank you so much for all your involvement in this show, as well as what you're talking about for additional communication with not only our community, but with the general community, because I think this is something that anyone can get a great deal from. So just much love to you always.
Thank you, Nick. Right back at you. And I really appreciate your support and look forward to seeing you at the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll be hopefully next year, too, with additional information and perhaps new projects. We would love you to come back to the podcast next year, which is coming up pretty soon. It's only like a month and a half away. I can't believe that. But anyhow,
right.
Continued success and much love always.
Thank you. Be well. Have a good evening.
You too. Okay, so we're up now to the second half of this very special program this evening. And I am very excited to have Donald Olson, a writer among other amazing creative activities. We're going to get into all of that. So a very, very warm welcome to you, Donald. Are you there? Are you there at the moment? I'm not hearing Donald.
Oh dear.
Hercules, is he on?
Can you hear me now?
I believe so, yes.
Yes. Oh, yes. Now we can. Hi.
What an introduction. I was
I don't know what happened there.
I was just saying, I enjoyed that your interview with Jonah so much. What an eloquent man. And I can't wait to see that show. Paul Monette, everything is there. And the whole AIDS era, I mean, we've all been through that. It's just it sounds like an amazing show. So, again, I mean, everyone should go see that.
It's a gem. It's a gem that he has put together. And you'll be moved by the poetry, by the emotion, by the overall feeling that this play gives you. It really is a gem. And let me know. By the way, I am going to go to the first performance, which is on that matinee at 3 o'clock. So if you happen to be able to go to that one, let me know so that we could meet.
I will do that.
Okay. So anyhow, Donald, I'm so excited that you're here, too. You've got I read a bit of your bio, and that is incredible. You have so many wonderful hats that you have worn.
Yes, thousands,
and very stylish, may I say, very stylish, too.
Yes,
but,
thousands
really,
of hats.
You're in some wonderful creative areas, and I didn't realize that until I was reading how many other areas that you have been and currently are in. We're going to get to that. But right now, I just want to ask a few basic questions, and that is, first of all, where were you born and where do you reside now?
I was born exactly in the center of the country in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Oh.
And I moved to Portland, Oregon in about 1970. And I currently am a legal resident of New York. I'm in New York right now, but I share a house with my husband in Portland, Oregon as well. So I go back and forth between Oregon and
Sounds like you got the best of both worlds there.
You've got the
Manhattan.
You know, you're not going to get me to say I don't have the best of both worlds. I love both places. I love New York because of the cultural life here and the diversity. I love Oregon because of the beauty of the landscape, and I have some great friends there. So, no, it's lovely to be able to go back and forth.
Oh, absolutely. That's wonderful that you have to both homes and in such incredible places also. So, that is absolutely wonderful. Well, I want to first concentrate on the major piece of this the half hour, and then I'd like to also, if we have time, to get to some of the other things you've been doing, because I find that quite interesting too. But let's go with the first one, which is an amazing new play. And it's going to be presented on Sunday, November 20th, which is coming right up. And that's at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And it's a radio. Would you call it a radio play? Is that how the term?
No, I'd call it a virtual reading because people will watch it online. It's a virtual reading of the play. But
you're right. That's much better.
Yes, it's
better description.
You know, it's acted out in the way that one can. Using Zoom and this other platform that it will be on called On the Stage. So it will be a lovely reading of a play that I wish people could see in person, but circumstances don't allow that. So it's going to be fabulous, just as it is, as a virtual reading at 5 p.m. on November 20th, and it's one performance only because of union laws and so on. So it's an opportunity for people to tune in and learn more about Christine Jorgensen, the fabulous Christine Jorgensen.
Absolutely. You know, I was in a restaurant many years ago, and there was a little bit of stirring in the middle of the room, and someone was coming in and being seated, and guess who it was?
I think it must have been Christine Jorgensen.
What a very, very good, educated guess. Yes, I recall that. I mean, it was a distance. It was a distance from her, but I do remember that moment. So, and you've got one of my dearest friends and one of the most talented people in the world, and that is Diana Munford playing Christine Jorgensen. What an amazing casting choice was.
We were so lucky, Nick, to get Diana. She is proving to be just a wonderful actress in this role. She's like channeling Christine Jorgensen. And
Christine Jorgensen was
a difficult person to channel. But the whole cast is fantastic. You know, Andrea Sears is in it. Bobby Jean Lowe is in it. And R. Scott Williams is in it. Every one of them is wonderful. Diana, of course, playing Christine Jorgensen is, I don't know, should we say the star? But all of them have very, very prominent roles in this play. And, you know, well, let's say that the title, first of all, Transition, the Christine Jorgensen Collection. So can I expound just a bit on that title?
Absolutely. That was a very, when I saw that, I read that, that was a very intriguing title. So please go ahead.
Right. Yeah, well, the Christine Jorgensen, okay, Transition, everyone in the play goes through some major transitions. The Christine Jorgensen Collection. So Christine Jorgensen was asked by the Royal Library of Denmark to donate her archives because she had had her sexual reassignment surgery, her gender reassignment surgery, in Copenhagen in 1952. And she was something of an icon, kind of a legend over there, and they wanted to have her archives in the Royal Library there, and they were going to call the collection, the Christine Jorgensen Collection. So that's one part of the title. The other part of the Christine Jorgensen Collection has to do with the people she collects and the people who were around her towards the end of her life. I mean, it is a collection of characters, amazing characters, all based on real people. So at the end of her life, Christine Jorgensen was cared for by two amazing trans women activists. One who was Joanna Clark, had been in the Navy. She had been a Navy radar warfare specialist. And a few months before she was to get her 20-year pension, she started to transition and she was dishonorably discharged. She then had her gender reassignment. She was asked by a recruiter to join the Army. She said, yes, of course, I would love to, but, you know, I've gone through my sexual reassignment surgery. He said, that's fine. You know, we know that, you know, join anyway. So she did. She did incredibly well until she was ready to get a promotion, and that went to the higher-ups in Washington. They saw that she was a trans. They immediately got rid of her. She sued. She was the first person, the first trans person to sue the armed forces and win. She won a settlement.
Wow.
And she won an honorable discharge. It's a pretty amazing. She then, later on, this is what I find also really touching. You know, the play takes place in 1987 and 1989, sort of before everyone was on a computer, before everyone had telemedicine and so on. So it was the AIDS era. There was a lot of research being done, but there was very little way that people could access all of this information, the research information. Joanna Clark started an AIDS clearinghouse on her own computer, which allowed anyone, not just institutions, but any person who wanted to access all the latest medical information about AIDS. And that, to me, is absolutely amazing. She also tried to become a nun, but the church wouldn't have her.
Really?
So she,
oh, that's
yeah, well, she,
wild.
You know, this. I know. This and she's one of the main characters. The other one, Barbara Lana Smith, was the honorary Danish consul to the Bahamas. She was a British woman, trans woman. She lived in the Bahamas for years. She had a courier air service there, which she sold to Federal Express before anyone knew what Federal Express was. She started to transition. You know, both these women were married before and had kids. She started to transition, and she was suddenly totally persona non grata. This is after she'd been knighted by the King and Queen of Denmark. So she left
Whoa.
The Bahamas. She came to the U.S., and she ended up in California, and she ended up being with Christine at the end of her life. So those are two extraordinary trans heroines, I would say, and nobody really mm-hmm. knows about them. just as people are forgetting about Christine Jorgensen as well, what a pioneer. This woman had her sexual reassignment in 1952. She basically
Incredible.
Did all the research and figured it out herself, had it done in Copenhagen. When she came back in 1953, she became the most famous person in America. She was on the front page of the newspapers with, you know, Eisenhower and the Korean War. And she had an incredibly successful nightclub career. That's my first musical is about that part of her life. And she then became a college lecturer. She did dinner theater. She was on all of the major talk shows except for Johnny Carson. And she was a real spokesperson. She was lovely. She was a beautiful person. She was articulate. She was intelligent. She was just wonderful to look at and to listen to. So, you know, this is in the 1950s, Nick. Good heavens, you know? Like, can you remember
Absolutely.
What the 1950s were like?
It's an incredible story.
And then a movie was made about her life in 1970, a very bad movie, I might add, but nonetheless. And she wrote her autobiography, which is a bestseller. So, you know, Christine Jorgensen paved the way for trans people today, and whether they know it or not, she really was out there on the front lines, talking to people right and left. Middle America, Mr. and Mrs. Middle America, they came to her nightclub acts, and she charmed them, and she talked to them. And I think that's worth remembering.
I wish I was in that club to see that performance. Oh, my goodness. And that other project that you did do, which is a musical based on that time of
right.
her life,
I
would give anything. if you have, if there becomes plans to reemerge that, I just think that's good. Especially now, for some reason, I'm thinking this timing is excellent. This time right now, a lot of people are waking up and realizing what's really going on and embracing diversity. And
I
just think the timing is incredibly right, not only for this work you're speaking of right now, but also the musical. I mean, when I heard that, I was like, oh, boy, this is incredible.
Well, Nick, I couldn't agree with you more. So we just have to find a backer now. Now, we had a fantastic first performance at the National Arts Club in March of this year. And, you know, I basically wrote this show for my friend, the incredibly talented, brilliant pianist, cabaret artist, tap dancer, Mark Nadler, because Christine didn't have any talents when she came back. She was a celebrity, but she didn't really know how to make a living. So a talent agent hooked her up with this guy named Miles Bell, that's who Mark Nadler plays, and he was a kind of a song and dance man, you know, started out in vaudeville, and he basically helped her to create this nightclub act, which played throughout the United States. It was really one of the most highly profitable nightclub acts in America in the 1950s. And so it's just the two of them in this play. You know, you have to think about everything, right? How many people the set is, you know. And I wrote 8 new songs, and there are a couple of old standards, old goodies, you know, that are in the public domain, but I wrote 8 new songs for them. And and then the show ends in the nightclub where they premiered the show, which was the Copa nightclub in Pittsburgh. So it's great fun, you know, and it shows her just emerging she was 27 years old. As I said, she didn't know how to sing. She didn't know how to entertain a crowd. And Miles taught her how to do all of that. So it's a touching show, and it's funny. It's amusing. It's wonderful. It's informative. It's all of that sort of stuff. So let's find a producer. Are you out there?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. You know, the expression, a life well lived.
Yes,
I can't think of a candidate more so than Christine Jorgensen. A life well lived. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
On so many levels, on so many important levels.
Yeah,
it's an amazing story.
It is an amazing story. And, you know, what's intriguing about her, too, is that she became a celebrity. And when you become a celebrity, that sort of becomes your profession. You know what I'm saying? And she had to try to maintain that. Now, in my play Transition, which is being done on November 20th, all of that is behind her. She's packing up her archives to send them to the Royal Library in Denmark. And she's, you know, sort of reminiscing about a lot of her career. But she did all of these amazing things. And she stayed as much as she could in the public eye for as long as she could, you know. So it's, I think it's a really touching and amazing story.
It absolutely is. Now, again, before we run out of time, would you tell our listeners, again, how they can get tickets?
Absolutely. The simplest way is to go to the website transformationtheater.org. That's transformationtheater.org, and it's theater with R-E at the end and not E-R. Transformationtheater.org. That will bring up a poster that shows you, you know, the play, the time, and all that. And there is a button there that says tickets. Click it. It'll take you directly to the website where you can buy a ticket. This is pay what you can with a $5 minimum, because we're hoping that everyone, even people with limited financial resources, should be able to watch this and enjoy this play. So transformationtheater.org, click on tickets. It'll take you to the website where you can actually buy the tickets, and then you will get a link to watch the show on November 20th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Western Time, Pacific Time, my other time.
It is on my calendar. It has been on my calendar, and I can't wait. And it also said it's 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 30 minutes, which includes a post-show discussion. Now,
right.
That's interesting.
Well, we will all be there post-show to answer any questions. People can, you know, people can write in a question, and we will hopefully be able to answer it. I don't think the show really runs 2 hours long. That seems awfully long. I would say it's more like, you know, an hour and 30 minutes, an hour and 40 minutes or something like that. But they're just doing
it
on the safe side, you know. Yeah.
Right, but that's good that there is an extra time in case it's needed. And but I think that's
right.
A really wonderful thing that was thought of, is to not only do the show, but then to allow people in the audience to ask questions or comment. I think that's excellent,
right.
And I think that's a really important feature for something like this, especially this kind of material. And
it's being aired on National Transgender Remembrance Day, Trans Women Remembrance Day. So it adds another little level to the whole thing. Yeah.
Wow. This whole time here that we're experiencing on our little planet is a time for welcoming diversity. And, you know, as you know, I have a UFO a group of people worldwide, and this is our 22nd year. And, you know, the thinking is, if we can't welcome and celebrate diversity of our planet on all the various colors, creeds, religious backgrounds, all of that, and just embrace it and celebrate our diversity, how in the world are we going to get along and welcome beings, brothers and sisters from other areas of the universe? And we really think that's evidently coming more soon than most people realize. The government has already put a lot out there about the fact that, yes, we were not telling you the complete truth, because we have been investigating that, even though we've been denying it. And there's a lot coming out now from Washington and other world governments about this. So they're setting the stage here, we believe, setting the stage for a disclosure, possibly a big one. So, again, it's embracing diversity of the different kinds and celebrating that. And this work, again, is doing that. I can't wait to see it, and to also we have much. How much more time do we have, Hercules? If you can let me know that.
10 minutes.
Oh,
ooh,
good.
10 minutes.
So the other part I wanted to get into, since we do have a few minutes left, is tell us a little bit about the other things that you do, because there's some very interesting other things that you've been involved with.
Well. You were talking at the top of this of your podcast about being creative and how important it is. So
yep.
I am not from a creative or artistic family in any way, shape, or form. However, someone, I don't know, touched me with some kind of, gift. I started being very creative when I was still a kid. I started writing when I was very young. I started, and also I was interested in Jonah's talk about the theater because, and your talk about seeing that theater in Springfield, Massachusetts. I write for the theater now because of the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis. I was a school kid. The theater opened. It was the first regional theater in the United States. Sir Tyrone Guthrie came over and worked with it. We were bussed in as school kids. We saw people like Hume Cronin, Jessica Tandy, Len Carew. We saw plays like The House of Atreus, Streetcar Named Desire, The Skin of Our Teeth by Thornton Wilder. I didn't know what the hell I was seeing, but boy, I couldn't wait to go to the next play, you know? I just absolutely love that live electrical audience, you know, in a theater watching a fantastic play experience that has stuck with me my entire life, and that's really why I write for the theater today. But anyway, so I also started out really as a novelist. I've published 7 novels. They've all been concerned with LGBTQ, and I'm just going to say gay from now on, gay characters and gay situations and gay, because I feel like, you know, that has been erased, effaced, defaced, and it's something that we just need to claim. Jonah was talking about that too. It's really important to do that. So, for instance, in the 1990s, I was in Portland. We had 2 major anti-gay rights battles. They were just horrible. They were absolutely horrible. And all of the press about it was in the straight newspapers written by straight journalists. Gay people were never asked a single question about these measures that would affect our lives profoundly. I found that amazing.
Wow.
And so I wrote a novel called Queer Corners about those anti-gay rights battles. I started writing, you know, in a period when everything, every movie, every novel about gay people, lesbians, you had to die, you had to commit suicide, you had to be murdered, you had to be crazy,
yep.
whatever.
Absolutely.
And I never bought that. I never believed that, and I never bought it. So my work was more about people in relationships and all that sort of stuff. And sometimes these novels I wrote didn't, you know, it took 15 years to get them published, for instance. You know, amazing. But anyway, so I wrote 7 novels. Those are all out there. I wrote a novel about Aubrey Beardsley. I've written many plays. They've been produced in Europe and here. My most recent play on stage was Oscar and Walt, which is about when Oscar Wilde came to America in 1882 on his first lecture tour. And he visited his literary hero, Walt Whitman, in Camden, New Jersey. So
wow.
that play is about the two of them meeting and what they talked about. And that's been, well, that was done with the Kinetic Theater Company in Pittsburgh most recently. And what else? Well, I've written 2 big gardening books. So I go out and I give talks about historic women gardeners and the gardens they've created. And the first book is called The Pacific Northwest Garden Tour. That has 60 gardens in Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia that you can visit, public gardens. And the second one is the California Garden Tour, 50 gardens in California you can visit. So I'm sort of a pioneer in this whole idea of garden tourism, because I think you should always visit a great garden or park wherever you go, because it'll expand your knowledge of a place tremendously. And also it's just healthy to be out in nature, you know. Nature is my big thing. So,
those
are some of the
true.
Things I've done. I could
write. Yeah, and also I think I read that you photographed some of the garden for the
yes,
book. Is
I,
that right? You were photographing?
Yes, I illustrated my photographs are the
oh,
illustrations
really? Okay.
for most of those books, yes. With
excellent,
a couple of exceptions.
Excellent. And you'd be on Facebook. We could find you on Facebook.
Find me on my website, DonaldStephenOlson.com. That's probably better.
That's the best way. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Say it again, please.
Donald Stephen Olson. That's Stephen with a V and Olson, O-N. DonaldStephenOlson.com.
Excellent.
And
excellent.
Yeah, you can see Oscar and Walt. You can hear some of my garden talks. You can find out about what's going on in my life and what's coming up next, and all of that sort of good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for the interview. It was a pleasure, absolute pleasure, and all of your amazing creativity. I can't wait to see the new play and all this coming up. And just we want you back for sure. And just much love to you always. Thank you so much for being my guest tonight.
Thank you, Nick. It's been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
So this is Nick Hurdle for The Creative Process, wishing you all an enlightened and exciting journey as you find your own path to deepen your own creative energies and more fully develop your own talents in whatever creative areas of expression your life takes you. Till next time, fully embrace your creativity in one or more areas of expression. Stay safe and always, always be very kind to one another. Goodbye for now. Much love to everyone out there. Good night.
And thanks to all who've listened, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in and you are patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to listen to us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And Nick is a songwriter, as he said, and let me see if I can locate Nick's song, and we will exit with it.
Thank you, Hercules.
Okay. There it is, We'll Stand Up by Nick Hurdle.
Thank you.